despite scoring 9 runs in the first inning of the first 2 games, getting competitive starts out of Tommy Henry, Brandon Pott, and Ryan Nelson in all 3 games, Diamondbacks still managed to get swept by the Atlanta Braves over this weekend. We'll talk about what went wrong in this episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. I'm your co-host, Wesley Beyer, and I'm joined by our usual host, Michael McDermott. How are you doing, Michael?
Doing great. We're throwing you guys a curveball, so we're actually going in reverse order this time to see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a change of pace from, you know, watching the Diamondbacks blow up all 3 games. How do you feel about this series, Michael?
It was a good series for 8 innings. That's how I kind of feel about that one.
Full disclosure, I did check out basically at the point where they just blew it. And when Miguel Castro entered today's game, I just knew how that was going to go. So, the bullpen, I mean, where do we get started on this? The starters weren't really the problem. Brandon Pha had a bad pitch in his start. I wouldn't call that a bad start.
Yeah, I was going to say with the bullpen, the Diamondbacks bullpen really struggled in the series. You go back to it. Game 1, they were handed a 5-2 lead after Tommy Henry gritted through 5 innings. And the bullpen got actually started out pretty well with 2-0 in the 6th and the 7th inning. But then the 8th inning, Miguel Castro came in with nobody on base, 1 out, gave up doubles to Orlando Arcia, Ronald Acuña Jr. That got the Braves a 5-3 game going into the 9th because Kevin Ginkle got out of the inning. And they get the final out of the inning. So 9th inning, first ball is a chopper over the mound. Blaze Alexander kind of misreads the hop, handcuffs him. So Riley reaches on an E6. Next batter, and it was pretty much next batter on. The Braves pretty much capitalized on every opportunity the Diamondbacks gave, where it was not necessarily making good defensive plays or a bad pitch, getting hammered, those kind of things.
Yeah.
They gave the Braves too many opportunities to beat them in the series, and they did. And that's kind of how I view it.
Well, I mean, this is the regular season Braves, not the postseason Braves. They're a good team. They won over 100 games last season, or close to 100 games. So, I mean, it's not like they're a bad, it's probably even a better team this year. I mean, they got a healthy Chris Sale. I mean, Chris Sale had a good start on, I mean, I'd say out of the Braves starters, he actually had the best start, oddly enough, today and Sunday. But I mean, they're a good team. They are going to take advantage of every opportunity. And a lot of, you know, these guys are much more established than, you know, any of the players in the Diamondbacks, other than, you know, Gurriel, Walker, and, you know, Jock Peterson. But, you know, for Blaze Alexander, I mean, he's been in major leagues for 2 weeks, not even. So
he's only like, you're talking about Blaze, who got about, he has 6 major league game, 6 or 7 major league games under his belt, not a lot of experience. And in that Braves series, you kind of felt like the inexperience kind of came back to bite them. Obviously, he had that error in the first game of the series that kind of opened the floodgates. And he later in the inning, he had trouble tracking down a pop fly from Jared Kelnick that ended up tying the game. It was a serpentine route to a ball hit behind shortstop that a more experienced shortstop probably gets to easier. And then the quality of bats in the series weren't necessarily great. I know he got a hit off of Sale, and the Diamondbacks ended up stranding him at third base. But we also forget that Blaze Alexander is a rookie that has been very inconsistent, both with the bat and the glove as a prospect. So you're looking at a player who is going to have a lot of growing pains over the next 2 to 3 months while they try to lock down the defense, the approach at the plate. So it's going to be a lot of up and down, and you kind of just have to be the team. And I guess you could say the fans as well, have to be patient and take it in stride kind of thing. And that's a lot due to the fact that their shortstop depth is pretty much gone. Like on March 26th, they had 3 healthy shortstops. By I guess you can say by the end of April 3rd, they only had one healthy shortstop on the 40-man roster, and then had to make a roster move before the final game against Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, that's unfortunately Blaze Alexander. I mean, he has the raw talent to be a good, you know, defensive infielder pretty much anywhere where you put him. But the best, you know, the best defensive shortstop on this roster are all on the injured list. So, I mean, there's like, part of it is that he's, you know, trying to like take that step up to replace, you know, Perdomo. And, you know, he finally had a chance to shine with, Lawler on the IL. I mean, I don't know if he'd have much growing pains. I mean, you could almost make the argument the Diamondbacks in general are going through, they're going to go through some growing pains over this season. And in the future, they are very young. I mean, there are guys who are basically, you know, a year removed from being in the minor leagues, if not less. So, Blaze is a less heralded prospect compared to, you know, even a guy like Perdomo. I mean, we forget that Perdomo was a top prospect, 5 years ago?
Coming into 22, I believe, was ranked on prospect lists.
So, I mean, he's a couple years removed from being a top prospect. I mean, Blaze has never been ranked that high by, like, the majority of prospect evaluators, including the two of us. I mean, we like the guy, but, I mean, there's better shortstops in the system, and right now there's really no one. They DFA'd Corbin Martin and called up Kevin Newman, sorry. Newman's a good defensive shortstop, but he's not, you know, I don't think he's Perdomo. I don't think he's Jordan Lawler there.
I mean, the thing that Newman provides, he gives you a little bit of stability. I think over the aggregate, he's a weaker defensive shortstop than Blaze Alexander, because Alexander's going to make plays that most shortstops might not be able to. But the thing that Newman provides is stability at multiple defensive positions, although he did make a nice play in the series finale in the eighth inning.
I think Newman right now is probably a more consistent, defensively hit shortstop. Just from not pressing, not having to, you know, there's less pressure on Kevin Newman to succeed defensively than there is on Blaze Alexander.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah. I think he'll be fine in the long run. A lot of it's just getting the reps in. I mean, he's played mostly at shortstop, and I think that's where he's like the majority of his starts have been at for the Aces and in the minor leagues. I know he's played at some other positions, but I think like I'd say like 75% of his starts at least have been at shortstop.
I think if it came down to it, I think they'd be comfortable playing him at short, second, and third. In fact, that was probably the original plan. And he was going to bat against lefties, and he's going to see two more against the Rockies with Freeland and Gomber.
The Diamondbacks are in a tough position in general right now. You're missing a closer. You're missing your shortstop. You're still waiting on Eduardo Rodriguez. You're still waiting on Jordan Montgomery, which is like probably the closest out of anyone right now. I think you could say that Blaze Alexander's defense cost the Diamondbacks probably two games out of the series, I would say, if not along with the bullpen. It's not all on him. He has to be given the opportunities to fail, which is really, you know, something to remember. In terms of the bullpen, I mean, right now it's really like Kyle Nelson has looked, you know, probably the best out of anyone so far. Kevin Ginkle, he had a bad outing, but I think he's reliable. It's the rest of the bullpen I question. What do you think that, you know, the Diamondbacks should do until Paul Sewald comes back? Like, who do you think they need to get rid of? Who do you think that is going to be fine in the long run? And who do you think could be that guy in the minor leagues, if anyone, Michael?
I think at the interim, they're going to have to just weather the storm with what they have. You can maybe make a roster move with one, maybe two spots. So the only reliever I think they can send that they might even consider sending down is Luis Frias. But also at the same time, they might not necessarily be that they might not necessarily be feeling confident to call up Justin Martinez from Reno yet without a significant sample size. And of course, Justin Martinez picked up a save for the Aces Sunday. I believe that's his third save of the year. I could be wrong, but he's actually been off to a pretty decent start if you wanted to see a call-up candidate, but Martinez has his own issues with his own strike throwing, and I don't know if that. But then again, at the same time, you kind of just have to let it rip at the major league level and see if he can provide a spark to a bullpen that's that half the bullpen is gotten the job done. The Ginkle, the Thompson, Mantiply, Nelson have done a fairly decent job. The rest of the bullpen. Yeah. So Castro's had back-to-back poor outings. Frias hasn't been good at all this year, although he did have a scoreless outing against the Yankees where he threw seven balls and four strikes somehow.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen is taxed in the first place, so we'd give it, you know, the guys that you mentioned that have been good aside from Kyle Nelson and Kevin Ginkle have all needed some rest. So that's why I'm like, excluding them in this conversation. If they didn't pitch in the series, then it doesn't count. Yeah, Justin Martinez has pitched 4 2/3 innings. That's all I'm going to jump in here for. Still has a 0 ERA, a whip of 107, two saves. This is the second save of the year. I mean, that's super small sample size. You're going to want to see him pitch at least for like another week or two worth of outings. So you're not going to throw him out there every day. But, you know, I don't think he would be called up before, like the end of April. I mean, what's as soon as you call him up, Michael?
Well, I mean, when you kind of just look at the bullpen, obviously, you've had four relievers that have been in five games. You got three relievers with five appearances. You have four that have been into four games already. And then Bryce Jarvis, the long guy, has had the fewest appearances with three. It's a bullpen that's been, I guess you could say, heavily worked through the first 10 games of the year. And I do think there's going to be a need to kind of, I guess, give these guys a breather. It's also due to the fact that they played a lot of close games this week. I think only one game was decided by more than three runs, and that was the one game they won. So when you have tight games like that, you're going to see those same type pitchers out there, and they're pretty much using when they're available.
It's not really like it's too early to go find a guy the waiver wire maybe you might find a guy there. Trading someone, I mean, first of all, you don't really have the sample size to know if a guy's going to be effective yet. So, I mean, I don't see Mike Hayes in making a move as far as a trade or, you know, maybe even calling Justin Martinez up for another, you know, couple weeks at least. I mean, if there was an injury or something like that, I could see them doing something. I mean, they're going to have some tough decisions to make here in the near future with Jordan Montgomery had 65 pitches for the Aces. How'd that, you can jump back in here, Michael. Jordan Montgomery, like, it was 65 pitches in the start in the, like, yesterday or today?
So, yeah, the plan for Montgomery Sunday was to throw four innings in around 65 pitches. He ended up getting his four innings in 60 pitches. So we'll kind of just pull up the StatCast game feed since we can do that for AAA teams now. So pulling that up here, you can see, this is the box score. We'll pull up the pitcher breakdown here. So it's a little bit difficult to get to, but once you figure it out for the first time, it's not too difficult. What you do in a normal game feed, and we'll show this at the end, is we're going to go all the way to the bottom. And if we want to, we can show Martinez. So you can see 60 pitches for Montgomery. Kind of the main thing that I noticed is his velocity is down 2 miles an hour. It shows you right there. But it's kind of, I guess you could say it's difficult to kind of assess if that's actually a legitimate problem or not. And obviously take your movement numbers and throw them out the window. They're pitching in the high elevation.
That's why it's a godsend then. You can actually get stat cast now because numbers are meaningless. Okay, BREF, your like unadjusted statistics are like they're basically meaningless when it comes to some of these minor league ballparks. Yeah, that's we're gonna find out about that next year with the A's playing in Sacramento. That's actually I think it's a pretty neutral ballpark. I mean, it's like even that's a pretty hitter friendly ballpark, and that's gonna be
Sacramento's gonna be very hitter friendly.
Yeah, it's very hitter friendly ballpark.
It gets very especially hot in summer, there.
Especially in the summer. So like that's the thing that like I think the major leaguers are. The general public's really gonna learn next year is like the if they go with that plan, the Triple A West is all those ballparks. It's I think there's only like one or two like true pitchers parks there. So this is one of those things that and once you have guys like Aaron Judge, like the owner said in there, they're gonna find out that there's definitely a big difference between a major league ballpark and a minor league ballpark. Jordan Montgomery should be back. He's aiming for the 19th. Do you think that's realistic?
He could even come back on the 18th, depending on what they want to do with Nelson.
Yeah, that's so possible. He get two starts in.
So if we just pull in, going back to the game feed here, real quick with Montgomery, the big takeaway for me is obviously it looked like. I'll have to watch it, but it looked like to me he had trouble commanding the sinker. That's why he had the three walks. But they weren't. But at the same time, he was able to land his curveball for called strikes, and then he was able to finish off hitters with his changeup with six swings and misses on seven swings. And you look at those, and those two pitches were able to, I guess you can say, beat hitters because we're talking called strikes or whiffs. And why that matters is because it's a pitch that the pitcher definitely beats the hitter in that pitch.
You know, it's like, you know, like, yeah, I just like to point out, like, you know, I'm not really worried too much about like movement. I can't see because I'm recording with my phone. So I'm like looking at the stack ass on that. But I'm not really worried about movement at all. Just because it's at elevation, like you said. Although, in fact, it's been a particularly cold weekend for Reno. It's probably a little more movement than you normally get in the summer, just because the air is a little denser when it's, you know, colder out. If you got like once Montgomery is called up, who do you think is most likely to be exited out of the rotation?
I mean, he lines up with Ryan Nelson, although Nelson did pitch better in the second half of his start. He got from the third through fifth inning, he got 12 swings and misses. Six of his seven strikeouts came in that stretch and basically only had one mistake, and that was a Michael Harris home run. And with Nelson, obviously the lack of swing and miss had been a problem coming up to the third inning. Yeah. But then after that, starting in that third inning when he struck out the 2-3-4 hitters on the Braves, that's kind of like you're hoping that's a light bulb moment for Nelson and not just like a flash in the pan moment.
Yeah, I mean in the grand scheme of things, the Braves are 6-4. I mean, they're gonna be a lot better than that. I would think the Braves 6-2. They're even better. Okay, so they're a good team. They're more than likely going to win the NL East. It's almost like an afterthought, just as much as the Dodgers are more than likely going to win the NL West. If they don't win, if neither team wins their division, I will be shocked. But you know, like in the grand scheme of things, that it's a good team. Overall, I mean, I think they played pretty well outside of, you know, those critical game losing moments. The upcoming opponent? I mean, that's really the thing is, like, you know, at this point you just move on to who's next. Yeah. You know, you hope that, the bullpen, you know, like the guys that are well rested, that it's day off tomorrow.
Nope. They go right to Colorado for three games, Monday through Wednesday. Oh, so the bullpen will be under further siege. Can we get Rip Bullpen in the chat?
Yeah.
That? Rip, Rip Bullpen.
Yeah, RIP Bullpen, because that's not a good thing that they're going to Colorado, and then that will probably cook everyone after that, because there's always the Coors after effect. So, I mean, we kind of said, you know, a few episodes ago and like recently, the Diamondbacks are really just like, this is going to be the toughest stretch of their season, likely because, you know, not everyone is on, you know, healthy. Not everyone is on the roster yet. The team generally, you know, had pretty poor, you know, Aprils, you know, historically.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, 2001 team and what started 4-8.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I don't worry about it. I mean, in you know, the grand scheme of things, it's one of those. It's just, you know, three games out of 162, and it's not like, I think you know, they identify some weaknesses there, obviously, with I'm sure Mike Hazen will go out and make some moves to, you know, find some more depth at shortstop. I don't really like, I mean, that's the funny thing is, like, half the guys that, you know, were options have kind of been eliminated just from, you know, the roster crunches. Like, you know, not long ago you had Diego Castillo, you had I'm trying to think of some of the other names there. Elvis Andrus was there in spring training. You know, like, you know, unfortunately, injuries, you know, it happens. It's part of the process. Do you have really anything else you want to talk about in this episode?
I mean, realistically, the Diamondbacks basically have got to figure things out soon, because if they can't afford to be down to be like 7-8 games below 500 entering May 1st, It's going to be a tough hole to climb out of. Unless they're a World Series caliber winning team at full strength, which I'm not 100% sure on that. It's not like we're talking about the 2019 Nationals here that started 19-31, or Philadelphia coming off a trip to the World Series, started off like 10 games under 550 games in. Yeah. I don't think the Diamondbacks necessarily have that type of roster.
A game now costs just as much in, you know, as it does in, you know, September. I think the roster will be stronger here once you have, you know, Geraldo Perdomo back from the IL. You have Jordan Lawler back, probably, you know. I think he'll probably be ready by like the All-Star break, later than that. So, I mean, like, once you get to there, like, the roster is going to get stronger. I mean, hopefully you have, you know, E-Rod back to, you know, full health by the beginning of May. You know, along with Jordan Montgomery, Paul Sewald, and hopefully he's effective, and all three are effective. And if that's the case, and then, you know, maybe someone in the minor leagues breaks out and contributes, you know, that's always possible. That's one thing about when there are injuries like this, is you actually see what you have. So, I mean, in this, you know, kind of testing situation, like, they're kind of seeing what they have with Blaze Alexander, and that's okay. I think, you know, really, yeah, that's probably the line where, like, if they're too big of a hole, where it's affecting their psychology of, like, oh, well, you know, we suck this year, then, yeah, that's the thing. It really just depends on the attitude. I mean, for every, you know, there's actually a lot of examples of teams having really bad starts and still making, you know, the postseasons, and, you know, I mean, there is a level, though, you're right.
Yeah, they have to I think when they get the full strength, they almost have to be like a 600 team. So a team that would win 96 games in a regular season if you played it out.
Yeah.
That's the thing that kind of worries me. I think at full strength, they are a 550 winning percentage team.
I think they're better than that. Like, some of these young guys are actually, like, they have a lot more potential than they've even shown, you know, in the playoffs. In the minor league, I think Corbin Carroll has a capacity to get much better this season. Not necessarily. Same thing with Alec Thomas. When, you know, I mean, we're missing Alec Thomas. Missing a lot of guys. I mean, if they're at full strength, if Alec Thomas actually could, you know, hit left-handed pitching this season, if Grichuk can, you know, be what we thought he'd be, you know, if Jock Peterson can, you know, the two of them can do the job and be a competent DH. If, you know, like really, you know, Christian Walker, a career year, he might have that. He's getting close to it. This is walk season, isn't it?
I mean, the thing really realistically is, by the way, a 550 team wins 89 games in a regular season.
Yeah. That's why I think they're a better team. I think they could be if you have Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas, Jordan Lawler, Geraldo Perdomo. I mean, Geraldo Perdomo more as a utility guy instead of a starter. Ketel Marte as if you just go around the roster, all these guys are all super young except for Christian Walker, Ketel, Gallen,
Gurriel's.
And Gurriel. And then, you know, like I said, yeah, Grichuk and Peterson. But I mean, overall, it's a very young team that is like not even, I don't think they really like established themselves necessarily individually, each as major leaders, other than Corbin Carroll. We're not talking about like Perdomo. Perdomo has already gone through all the struggles of being terrible, coming back and being good. And I think that's the thing, is that like, if you had every single guy, like, you know, reach their top, like 80th percentile, I think this is like easily like a 9,500 win team. If they're all healthy. I mean, we're already at that point where that's impossible. So if they could play like a 600%, you know, that'd be like, so like 600 a 95
from mid May onwards.
I mean, that's kind of okay.
So you're talking to like 120 games here, yeah. Like 72 wins to get to the postseason. They would have to have at least another 15 wins.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
why I said 600, because right. Yeah, I think they're going to be around 15 wins at that point, around May 15th.
That's basically what they mean. He's going to have to figure out the bullpen real quick. I'm not less worried about the lineup. I'm less worried about, you know, shortstop necessarily, because we know both know it's temporarily, you know, temporary thing. Geraldo Perdomo will be back. Eventually Jordan Lawler will be back. Hell, Tommy Troy could, you know, break
Tommy
out.
Troy's not taking fly this as
yeah, no, he's not doing shit. Yeah, I know. So I mean, really, I mean, I think they're overall like, it's not. I mean, look at the team last year. They had some really awful stretches. So, you know, look at that August, look at that July and like June. That was like one of the worst, some of the worst baseball we've seen and we've talked about. Was played last year, and they still managed to make the World Series. And I mean, you're off to a bad start. You're off a bad start. And like you said, even in 0-1, hey, maybe that's a sign. The Diamondbacks, yeah, you heard it here first. Heard it here first, folks. The Diamondbacks sucking right now is a sign. The Diamondbacks are going to win the World Series. If they win the World Series, screenshot this video, clip this audio, share it, like, subscribe, and leave a comment about how I'm obnoxious and annoying when I talk like this.
I was going to say, if you take out that 7-25 stretch from July 4th to August 11th, the Diamondbacks play, yeah, were 77 and wow, half their losses really did come. Sorry, hold on.
What was
77, yep, and 53, so that would have been a 592 winning percentage. So there you go.
Okay, so just under 600. That's kind of, I knew you'd thrown that number out me before. And I kind of remember, and I wasn't sure if it was like 5-9 or something, but I round up because that's much easier. But yeah, no, I think they had the potential like that. Even then, they had some, you know, injuries and ineffectiveness. I mean, well, we don't know. I mean, they could be awful, and you know, the Giants could, you know, win the division.
Well, we don't know. The Giants have a giant horseshoe up their arse.
Yeah. Oh, they got that weird Giants, even odd year juju, whatever they did. They redid the ritual so that they could,
I thought their 107 win season came in an odd year.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they redid their juju last year, whatever their ritual. And then now they're bouncing back, and, you heard it here first, the Giants in the World Series. So if that happens, you can also clip this. Screenshot, like, and subscribe, and leave a comment.
You're killing me on these. All right. So kind of just wrapping up here. Like I said, the Diamondbacks not playing good baseball right now. They're playing a Colorado Rockies team that's fast-tracked for 100 losses this year. But Colorado obviously playing at Coors Field is always challenging, just no matter how good or bad the Rockies are. The Diamondbacks will be sending Gallen and Kelly. So for me, they have to take 2 of 3 for sanity reason. Not necessarily like must win, but kind of like a sanity check. It's like, can they at least beat the Rockies? If the answer to that question is yes, then it's like you got something to work with.
Yeah, they need to take at least 2 of 3. I mean, let's say I want to give the, you know, Rockies fan like a false sense of hope. You know, because I know it's been a rough season, and you know, sweeping the Diamondbacks would like really just you know do something for them to keep them, you know, so they just don't jump off a cliff. That'd be messed up because you know they're gonna end up losing 100 games easily this year. So yeah, 2 of 3, I think that's a fair prediction. Coors Field is not as bad as it used to be, but it still has a giant outfield, and fortunately the Diamondbacks have a, you know, pretty rangy outfielder, so I'm never too worried about playing in Coors Field these days. But it definitely is taxing on you know, all your pitchers, obviously, and the altitude changes definitely. It might be a factor in game one, just going from, you know, sea level with the Braves to, you know, Coors Field. That could be a challenge for some people. I mean, I wouldn't expect them, you know, but it could be. I mean, that's just about it.
All right. So anyways, if you enjoyed the show, make sure to hit the like button, subscribe, share it on Facebook, share it on Facebook or your favorite social media platform. If you're listening in on the podcast, give us a 5-star review, give us a comment why the Snakes on the Diamond podcast is the best podcast for Diamondbacks news and analysis. Kind of just talking about the current state of the team, and we'll be back. To talk about the Rockies series later this week.